Blog Talk Radio.
All our whiskey girls and gamers, this is Nurse Hatchet. You are listening to the Wolf Pack.
You are listening to Full Spectrum Horror.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you're about to experience may be the most exciting night of your life. Your seat will start rumbling. Your heart will start to pound. But don't be alarmed. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what you came here for. The party starts now. Ladies and gentlemen, coming at you loud, live, and direct from the darkest depths of your imagination. Welcome.
We take you to the Hotel Martinet in Brooklyn, where Bobby Millett and his orchestra are offering a program of dance music.
You're Satan, aren't you?
Oh, boy, I could never sit through this without a couple of beers, you know?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, introducing the seventh member of the Village People.
The horror sex symbol, Christopher Hyland.
Not just dancing. He's firming his thighs and tightening his buttocks.
Oh, man, this is so bad.
I mean, women just, you know, they just, they gravitate towards me. I mean, I don't understand. I think I have a certain kind of magnetism.
The king of splatterpunk, Eric Morse.
A sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
And now, on with the show.
Radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
On its skin. Else gets the hose again.
Damn.
school.
Smoke weed every day.
Alright, alright, alright. You gonna learn today. Alright, alright, alright!
Sorry about that, Mr. Highland.
Okay, can I talk now?
Yes, indeed.
Thanks. Okay, we're back. It's our first episode of the new season of Full Spectrum Horror. And you know me, Christopher Highland, and let's see, who do I have with me tonight? Oh, yes. Let's see, is he George Costanza or is he Eric Morse? You be the judge. What do you think?
It's me, though. The King of Splatterpunk, Mr. William Pasnik, Eric Morris. Mr. Island, how is your holiday hiatus?
Just fine. It was quiet. And as you know, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't know, I managed to finish writing my novel.
Yeah, I do recall that. I mean, you know, I'm very happy for you. Yeah, you got it done and all that. During the hiatus, that was cool. Me, I've been busy, you know, just, you know, all kinds of stuff going on, getting ready for some exciting things that are going to be coming in 2016. You know, Linkville Press is going to be finally putting out Symphony of Death part one in the next few months. Just have to wait for Amanda to finish the formatting on it. So that's going to be exciting. And of course, you know, also, I mean, you know, we'll have Symphony of Death part two that will also be coming out this year. And I'm currently working on part three. So, you know, just busy, busy, busy.
Thank God. How many parts are there going to be?
Oh, the anthology is going to be 6 parts long, plus there's going to be a 7th book, which is going to be the complete anthology.
Oh, so it's going to be kind of like Clive Barker's Books of Blood, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Oh. Exactly. That's one of the inspirations for it. You know, my fellow splatterpunk writer, Clive Barker.
Yeah, that doesn't happen often enough, people doing writing anthologies.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it occasionally happens. But
and
it's
this,
just usually
this,
novels.
Yeah, and this is going to be unique in that, you know, the individual parts, you know, the first 6, you know, individual parts are going to be just e-books. And then the compilation is going to be e-book and print.
Huh, good.
It's very interesting. Linda Marie is very excited about that, and you know, to see how the fans really like that. All righty, Mr. Highland.
Yes.
It's that time.
Do I have to, Daddy? I didn't want to.
Yes, it is. It is that time, so here we go.
Okay, you don't
too many nights of little week wondering what is on Chris's mind.
Come on, don't do that again.
I've tossed and turned and crashed and burned imagining what I'd find. So I'll just sit here and drink my beer, maybe bow my head and cry. 'Cause I really wanna find out just what is on Chris's mind. Yes, he really wants to find out just what is on Chris's mind.
Are you talking to me?
No, yes. Tommy. Go play with your ball.
Man, you're killing me, man. Ugh. You don't have to do that every time. You can just say, oh, it's time for the special segment.
Yes, I know, but
oh,
I wanted it to be special just for you.
All right. Okay, I have something in mind for tonight. It's from a recent article I found online, and it's basically how can horror be great again?
Nice.
It was an article on, I don't know if it was on Dread Central, but I do know it was on Bloody Disgusting. But anyway, it posted a list of either at least do's or maybe do's and don'ts. And I came up with some of my own. And as a writer, I do my best to avoid cliches, but one of the things filmmakers and writers can do, I'd say, how do I put this? You shouldn't, I don't want to say demean the audience. You shouldn't write for teenagers. You should write for adults. Because horror films tend to be geared towards teenagers, they tend to be shallow. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, point number two. And this segues from point number one. Try not to have horror movies and horror stories be populated mostly or fully by teenagers. And
oh,
I certainly didn't do that with the novel I just finished writing. I mean,
yeah.
one of the 80s
and that, a lot of the horror films didn't have a lot of teenagers.
Well,
I mean, there were
some
teenagers, but not. It wasn't the entire film.
One of the main characters in my novel is an old woman, but she's important to the plot. I mean, if she wasn't in the novel, there wouldn't really be much of a story. I mean, it would be a completely different story. And frankly, it wouldn't be very interesting either.
No, agreed. Agreed. And also, you know, when you're stuck using teenagers exclusively, it kind of narrows the storylines.
Yeah.
Yes, I do agree with you on that fully.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed is that within the last year, I've been seeing a change in horror films, that they are changing in more in that direction rather than doing the teeny bopper thing. They're actually, you know, doing more with older people and you know, getting a little bit more variety.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So things are changing, Mr. Island. I mean, you know, films, you know, are moving away from the Scream rules of horror, and they're starting to get more originality, and they're starting to get better writing and everything. I mean, there's so many changes going on, which are for the betterment of horror.
Yes, that's true, which segues into my third point. You don't have to have a lot of characters. I mean, you can have, and then this goes back to my novel. I mean, you can have two main characters.
Oh,
which is probably better. I mean, the less characters you have, the more room you have for characterization.
Yeah, but it's a lot harder if you only have two characters.
You know, depends on what kind of characters you're dealing with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've seen movies like the movie Bug, which only had maybe three characters in the entire movie and that. And some movies work out. It's just a lot harder when you have less characters than more characters. The problem is that what you have to do is you have to find a balance with your characters.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And in that case, when you're dealing with not a lot of characters, you want to have a character that's memorable, and whenever they show up, they tend to steal the show.
Pretty much.
I mean, you read my last chapter in my book. I mean, wouldn't you agree that she does that? That one character?
Oh, very much so. But you also had other interesting characters interacting with that character.
Yeah.
So it didn't feel like it was just two characters. It felt like it was a bunch of characters interacting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do see what you mean. The focus of the scenes are focused on an individual.
Yeah. It felt organic.
Very much so. Man, Mr. Harlan, we got a bunch of people who have decided that they're going to sit in and listen via the phone line.
I can imagine. I know at least who one of them are. Is.
Yeah, maybe I don't care, because you know, as we are aware, we don't accept calls on this show.
Yes, not even for free pizza delivery. Not even drive-by pizza delivery.
Nope.
Can you imagine that? Having an order for drive-by pizza delivery, you're standing on a corner. Yeah, I need a pizza right here. 5 minutes, and they just throw it to you, and you can't catch the box.
So, anyways, Mr. Highland. So, yeah, I get what you're saying on your thing, and yeah, that's, you know, it's quite true in regard to horror. You know what, you know how horror can be improved. You know, it can be improved with better performances, better writing, and you know, better storyline. I mean, it's,
yeah.
you know, that's pretty
yeah,
much
you want to write. You want to write stories and come up with ideas that actors will be tripping and falling over themselves to be cast in movies of them.
Pretty much. I mean,
you don't see that happening in horror movies. Most actors say, "Oh, horror movie? Fuck that."
You know, oh, did you hear the latest on Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah,
the idea that he's talking about doing a horror film. Now that is going to be interesting to see what Quentin Tarantino comes up with for a horror film. And his inspiration, he quoted, was The Exorcist, which, you know, I mean, that's an extremely well-written piece of work. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what Quentin Tarantino does with this. Because Quentin doesn't do your standard film. He's going to take horror and he's going to do it in his own way. So it's going to be, in some ways, I would say, grindhouse horror.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, very exciting. And I wish Quentin Tarantino good luck on that, because it's exciting to hear about this stuff. All right, Mr. Hyland, you know, we've been sitting here chatting, and we still haven't talked about the movie tonight.
Yes, and speaking of which, the Beast Within novel is a hell of a lot better than the movie.
Oh, I can
yes,
imagine.
I actually read the book for the show.
Yeah. Though I found it interesting that Tom Holland actually wrote the script for The Beast Within. This, oh, and to tell the audience, this is not the Roger Corman film. This is the one by Philippe Mora, directed by Philippe Mora, and based on a novel. Do you remember the author of the novel there, Mr. Hyland?
Yes, Edward Levy.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, the thing is that there's been like 6 or 7 films done with the title Beast Within, so, you know, we wanted to make sure that you knew that it was the 82 one, the Philippe Mora film. So anyways, yeah, let's talk about The Beast Within. You know, give me your information on it.
Okay, well, as I'm sure you know, the movie cuts out a lot. It starts out in Mississippi in 1964, and it's night, and this couple is driving along in Mississippi, and we're in the book. It takes place in Arkansas. And they're driving along. They miss their turn where they're going to live, and they turn around. And, of course, they get stuck in the mud, not the cliche. And the husband runs off in order to call and get a tow truck. And they have a dog in the car, and the windows open just enough for the dog to slip through and run off. And the wife runs off and looks for the dog, and there's this beast man that's running around in the woods. And the wife is attacked and raped, and the husband comes back later and finds her, and that's the beginning of the movie. And then it cuts to 17 years later, where the son is, he's a teenager and he's in...
Isn't he?
What?
He's having medical problems because when we meet him, he's actually in the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, the book touches on...
Dreams
the book goes
about a cabin.
Yeah. Yeah, the book goes into that a lot. I mean, the book starts off in the 1920s.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, the movie cuts out way too much. I mean, the book starts in the 1920s, where this guy, he's a traveling salesman. He has sex with this one woman, and the husband finds them, locks the man up in the cellar, and just drives him to become this beast man. And you think, well, is it psychological? Is it hereditary? You don't really know in the novel. And he turns him into a cannibal in the novel. And, of course, the movie later on touches upon that as well.
Yeah, a little bit. Not an over amount.
Yeah, where he's feeding corpses to the kid's real father, the beast man. And speaking of the kid, I mean, you see him transform, but most of the time when you see him ravenous, he's kind of looking like Teen Wolf, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's looking all bloodshot and pale. And
you see him
bite people and rip them apart, and of course that's what happens in the book, but that happens a lot more in the book. In the book, you see him, they describe his childhood, you see him attack someone as a child, see him run off in the middle of the night as a kid and attack animals. And when his parents find out in the book, they put bars on his windows. Oh, there's just so much that's not in the movie. Let's just face it. The book is a much better story than the movie. But the movie is fine for what it is, but could have been a hell of a lot better. But I could see it being remade now and be more like a novel.
Well, hopefully, I mean, it could be.
Yeah, like in the movie, you see him bite and devour. Not that much. He's mostly, bites one person, and then another person, he throws them off, and they get electrocuted. Another person gets stabbed and embalmed. That's not in the book. Let's see what else. Someone gets their head ripped off, which that part I saw coming a mile away. I mean, I knew he was going to burst through the wall, and I kept saying to the screen, "No, don't go near the wall." See what else happens. What?
Oh, nothing there, Mr. Highland. Listening to you.
Oh. Okay, I'm looking at the description online. Let's see, he meets this girl, and they're walking in the woods, and he gets it in his idea that they should go walking near the bog even though the girl says, oh, you don't want to go down there, there's nothing there. He just says, oh, it's okay. She's kind of even though she's kind of creeped out, he's like, all right, I'll go with you. And this one part, they're kind of making out, they're kissing on the ground, and the girl's dog is off somewhere. It's digging, and it digs up a hand. And I just find that odd. It's just kind of funny. It digs up a hand, and it brings it back. Just lays it up right
no,
next to
right
the thing. It's like, here's a hand. Look what I found.
Yeah,
and I'm watching this right after that happens, where the cops come, and I just sit at the screen, lousy manipulative dog. And then later the girl's father comes along and doesn't want his daughter to have anything to do with what's his name? Let's see. What is his name? Michael. Yep. And then later in the movie, you find out that he's related to the person who locked up Michael's real father, the Beast Man.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the judge is related as well. So that's kind of the reason why Michael's character is going on that rampage and killing people. And speaking of which, the main transformation scene towards the end, it's not the best.
No.
But then again, people who have seen the movie would agree with me and would say, oh, well, that goes without saying. It starts off, you know, he's looking like Teen Wolf again during the transformation scenes, but it goes down from there where he's looking like a fly reject.
Yeah,
but, you know, when the skin's all stretching on the face, because the way it's described in the novel, most of it in the novel, it leaves it up to your imagination. You think, wow, is he a werewolf? Is he kind of like reverted to a feral state? I wasn't sure until the end. It's like, oh, okay, he's like a feral kind of beast kind of person. But not here.
Yeah.
Here, this is
he looks almost like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't overly impressed with that.
Yeah, they could have done a hell of a lot better job with the final transformation. It was kind of like, Well, even though I haven't seen this movie, Extra or
Extra, yeah, yeah, Extra,
or this other,
I remember this
movie I haven't seen, but it just seems like it was a reject from a bad alien movie or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, literally.
It doesn't seem like a feral beast.
Yeah, it didn't match what they were building up to. I mean, you know, what you were expecting was more almost like a werewolf or something. But
yeah,
what you got is this big lumpy thing. It just didn't look right. Just seemed off. So anyways, yeah, so Beast Within.
So he's going off and he's going after the judge and takes him out, and then he's going after his would-be girlfriend and attacks her, and then the sheriff and everybody else catch up to him, and the mother ends up having to shoot him in the head. But in the book, that doesn't happen.
Oh, really?
He ends up living, but trapped in his room again with the bars on the wall, on the window.
Huh. Yeah. In the book, does he rape that girl?
Not the girlfriend that he has in the book, but one of the other girls that he encounters.
Oh, okay. So yeah, they cut that down and they made it the girl that he was interested in gets raped at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book leaves it open for a sequel, but I'm actually glad that they didn't write a sequel to that. I mean, they didn't need to. You don't have to have a sequel just because you leave it open for one.
Yeah. Also this, you know, I mean, it was a good story in that it built up very nice and that, but the ending kind of ruined it. You know, turning him into that thing just didn't work.
Yeah, and not just that. There, even though it was a creature movie, and not really a slash movie, but a monster movie taking place in the early 80s, doesn't automatically mean, oh, you have to have it in modern times. Oh, you have to not have hardly any depth to the characters. Oh, we can't make it like the book. Oh, we can't have a historical horror movie. Oh,
I know. Oh, understood.
It's because of the budget. But still, I mean, they could have tried.
Well, yeah, they could.
But then again, that's what remakes are for.
Exactly. Exactly.
If they did do a remake of this, it would probably be a two-part TV movie or something like that.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'd have a better special effects person who could create a better creature. Of course, the thing is that the other Beast Within movies weren't any better. The monsters weren't that great either.
Yeah, but they weren't related to the book.
No.
They didn't have anything to do with that.
Nope, not at all.
Hell, I liked the book so much, I'm looking forward to reading his first book.
Nice.
And that's about killer spiders.
Nice, cool.
All
right,
yeah,
one of the. We got only a few minutes left.
Okay, yeah, I was saying one of the reviews for his first book says that it's the best killer spider book ever.
Nice. Well, that's cool.
It's really saying something because I don't know. I'm not aware of any other Killer Spider novel. Seems he cornered the market with that one.
Yeah, there's been a few, but they're hard to find.
Goes to me.
Yep. Yeah, you have to really look for those. Anyways, Miss Silence, so yeah, we're running down here, you know. Any last thoughts on the Beast Within?
Yes. Oh, I just remembered. I love the soundtrack.
Yeah, so did I.
It was the composer's last soundtrack that he did.
Huh.
And I'm surprised that he has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Nice. Well, that's great.
So if you want to see a movie, a monster movie from the 80s that has a great soundtrack, see this movie. Despite the
and
bad special effects.
The monster at the end.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Alrighty. So anyways, Mr. Highland, so next month when we come back, we're going to be doing horror news and we're going to be doing reviews like we usually do. And And then after that, another movie night.
Yes, and I know exactly what we're going to be talking about, and I have a special guest that I want to bring on. And you might know who he is.
Nice. So he'll be helping us discuss it.
Yes, and describing it in gross detail.
Nice.
Because I'm sure you know this movie well.
Well, I'll find out.
It's one of those gross. It's one of those gross movies.
Nice.
I haven't seen it yet, but I know it's gross, but I'm going to find out how gross it is.
Cool deal. Alrighty. So anyways, last words to the fans here there, Mr. Highland.
Yes. Order some pizza. You look like you need it.
Yeah, definitely. Alrighty. So anyways, alright. So, remember, next month, more full spectrum horror. I'll probably be doing some Awakening of Horror sometime. Probably either this month or next month. I'm not sure whenever I get a chance to come up with something for it. And I'm working on possibly a couple of interviews, so we'll see how that works out. But anyways, so for the Wolfpack Presents, this is William Patterson, a.k.a. Eric Morris, saying keep America strong, watch horror films, and release the beast.
Bye.